So we're going to read about how Mary anointed Jesus prior to his going to the cross. This is written in three of the four Gospels, and each one adds a little bit to the story, which is important. And so we'll be switching around a little bit, but we'll start in Mark chapter 14, and we're going to start in verse number 3. And it says this, "And being in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came having an alabaster flask of very costly oil of spikenard. Then she broke the flask and poured it on his head." And we'll stop right there. This is a story about Mary and her form of worship. Her form of worship to Jesus. And we've talked about in the past several sermons that God has led me through how David, his worship was very costly. And his worship was also very extravagant. We talked about when David decided to build the house of the Lord told him no, but David set aside all of these riches that would go into the house of the Lord, and it was somewhere in today's expense around $150 or $160 billion worth of gold alone that David set aside. Extravagant, way above and beyond what the norm is, but this is what he set aside for the house of God, because he said, "I want the house of the Lord to be magnificent and known throughout the earth." And here we have Mary, and her example is that worship is very personal as well. So it should be costly, something that matters to us. It should be extravagant because our God is worthy of it. And there should also be a personal side. It should not just be mechanics that we go through, but it should be something personal. And we see that it's personal because this is Mary's own oil that she brings. Later on, it's going to tell us how much this oil was worth. They say it was worth about 300 denarii, which a denarii is about the cost of a day's wages. So this was probably a year's wages for Mary, or in their time. Maybe she didn't work, I don't know. But this was about a year's wages. So put that in terms of our setting. This was multiple thousands of dollars. Maybe $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, whatever it is that people make nowadays. This is what she had in her hands. This was something that was hers. The Bible doesn't tell us either way, but probably she was a single woman. A single woman in that time, this was probably her inheritance or her retirement fund. We could put it that way. This was probably something like we would say our 401k. Something that we save up for our retiring years, and here it is in her hands. And she was very intentional about it as well, because this was in her possession, and she wasn't in her house. She's in the house of Simon the leper. Mary and Martha and Lazarus, we know that they were brother and sister. Jesus raised him from the dead. They lived in Bethany as well, and in John it tells us that Martha was there serving, and Mary is here, and Lazarus was sitting at the table. But they weren't in their house. So this means that Mary brought it from her house to this house. She fully intended on doing this. This was not an impulse. This was something that she planned on doing. This worshipful act was something that she had in mind, and she planned on doing it. And sometimes we too need to plan. Our days are so busy, and we have so many things going on in life. Sometimes we actually have to plan times of worship for God. Because maybe it won't happen if we don't. So many things come and they're so immediate and urgent many times. We have to plan and say, I need to spend this time with God. And so we see Mary. Mary does this. She takes this incredible amount of money, something that's worth an incredible amount, and she just breaks the flask. I like that it says she breaks it. We sang that song, No Turning Back. It's kind of what it reminds me of. It's broken. You can't put it back together. She didn't just uncork the bottle. She didn't say, well, maybe I'll save half of it. You know, once I starve, we'll see how it goes. And if it goes okay, well, then maybe we'll use the rest. She just said, I'm breaking the whole thing. It's not going back. We're not going back anymore. I'm not going to save anything. I'm just taking it, and I'm going to make a decision, and we're going to go for it. And so she breaks that flask. She says, I'm going to worship Jesus, and I'm going to give him everything. I don't care if it costs a lot. I'm going to give him everything. This is kind of the way, it reminds me of Elisha. You remember when Elisha was first called by Elijah? He met him, Elijah meets him in the field, throws his mantle on him, and he's plowing with the oxen. And then Elijah walks on, and Elisha tells him, okay, hold on. And then it says that he slaughters the oxen as a sacrifice and he burns up the yoke. It's like he says, I'm not going back. This was his livelihood. And he burned it all and sacrificed it all. There was nothing left. It's kind of like Mary. She's like, I'm not going back. I'm not going to stop. I'm going forward. Going forward. And this is the way Mary was as well. Why don't we turn over to 1 Chronicles? I'm going to have you maybe jump around a little bit. 1 Chronicles 29. This was Mary's own personal possession. And this is not the only time when this kind of thing, this extravagant and personal worship occurs in the Bible. This is another part of the Bible which talks about David's contribution to the temple. In 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 3, it says this, 1 Chronicles 29, verse 3. It says, moreover, this is David talking, moreover, because I have set my affection on the house of my God, I have given to the house of my God over and above all that I have prepared for the holy house, my own special treasure of gold and silver, 3,000 talents of gold, and of the gold of Ophir, and 7,000 talents of refined silver, to overlay the walls of the houses. So David, of his own money, it says his own special treasure, his own special treasure, he gives 3,000 talents of gold. 3,000 talents of gold. By today's account, this is billions of dollars. At today's gold prices, around $4.5 billion of his own money, of his own special treasure, he gives to the house of God. This is equivalent to what we see like Bill Gates nowadays, billionaires, Warren Buffett nowadays. They're giving billions of dollars to multiple things, charities all around. But none of them are giving billions of dollars to one thing, like David does. Extravagant, personal, something meaningful, an extravagant, costly, personal offering before the Lord. People do this, and they've done this throughout the years. I mean, if you go back 100 years, Dale Carnegie gave away huge amounts of his fortune. So did the Rockefellers out of their Shell oil industry. Billions of dollars given away. but none strictly to the house of God. And we see that in Mary as well. She might not have had billions of dollars like King David, but she says, what I have, and what is my security, and what is probably going to hold me for my older age, all of her security, all of the things that she might count on when she most needs it, she says, I give it away. I'm just going to give it to Jesus as an act of worship. And do you realize that David wasn't able to build the house of God? Even though he gave all that money, he was never going to see any of it put to use. It wasn't a what's in it for me attitude for him. He just was like, it's for God, I'm going to do it. He was never going to see that house built. $4.5 billion, just said, okay, for a future thing, I'm never going to see it. I'm never going to know what happened with it, how it looked, what it came out to be. Never going to see its beauty, but I still got to do it. I still got to do it. Our God is worth it. When you understand what Jesus has done for each and every one of us, you want to lavish everything that you have back on him. When you understand that Jesus did so much for us, he loves us so much, you just want to give back to him. And you don't care necessarily about the cost. And this is what we see in Mary. And this is what we see in David as well. In John chapter 12, there is a parallel passage. It adds some details. John chapter 12 and verse number 3. Says this. I'm going to start from verse number 1. John chapter 12, verse number 1. It says, then 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus, who had been dead, whom he, Jesus, raised from the dead, there they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one who sat at the table with him. Then Mary took a pound of very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. It's a beautiful picture. The house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. The house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. When you worship God, when you worship Jesus, when you put it in your mind, I'm going to worship him, the atmosphere around you changes. The atmosphere around you changes. When you go through difficult times, sometimes you just need to stop what you're doing and worship God. Because when you worship God, things change around you. And if it's not the circumstances, then it changes you. It changes you. Through all the difficult things that even we just went through, this happens to us all the time. When there's difficult things, we will take time, friend and I will take time and just worship God. And we end up being changed. Sometimes Fran will be alone for a while. Sometimes I'll be alone for a while, not knowing what each other's doing. We see the other person and was like, you've been worshiping Jesus, haven't you? Because you could see there's a difference. There's a look. There's a peace that comes on us. Because the whole house gets filled with the fragrance. You worship Jesus, you pour out on him, and the whole house changes what it smells like. The whole house around changes when you set your mind to say, I'm going to worship my God because he deserves it regardless of all the things that are going on in life. Think about it. This is 6 days before Jesus was going to the cross. She pours this oil, and in another one of these passages, it says it was a pound of oil, and she broke the thing and poured it all on him. A pound of oil. 6 days before he goes to the cross, she starts on his head, or wherever she started, she ended up pouring on his head, pouring on his feet, and a pound of oil. It has to drip down your clothes. Try pouring a pound of oil on you and not having it get on your clothes. It's not possible. So this oil goes down the hair, the head, and probably drips down some of the clothing of Jesus. And this is probably the clothing that he wears when he's going through his most difficult time right before the cross. And that smell stays on the clothes. Have you ever sprayed some cologne on you and then you put that shirt away and maybe you don't launder it? Oh, it's okay, I can put it away. And then a day later you're around somebody and they're you smell good. Well, I didn't put anything on. Oh, it was the other day. That smell, it stays and it lingers. Now imagine a whole pound of oil. Or maybe you guys just wash your clothes after you wear them, you know, for an hour and you wash them. Maybe that. Well, some people don't. And so now it's on him. The smell is there. And think about it. Think about all the people that are meeting him in that last day. The guards, they strip off his clothes so that they could beat him. Does it make you wonder? Does it make you wonder if they were like, wow, this smells incredible, but we got to beat Jesus? And there he is standing in front of the priest, and they slap him in the face, and they're so close to him. It makes me wonder, did they actually smell him? Did they smell that offering, that worship offering that Mary gave, those that were close to him? And what about Pilate standing in front of him, asking him questions? What is that smell that I smell? The Bible tells us in 2 Corinthians that we are to God the fragrance of Christ. We are to God the fragrance of Christ among those who are perishing and among those who are saved. To one, we are the fragrance of life unto life. To another, we are the fragrance of death unto death. But we are the fragrance of God to this world. How is it that you smell when you're going through difficult things? How is it that you smell to the world when you go through difficult things? Have you ever met those people where it's just constantly negative? It's just constantly negative. Some people nowadays, they you dial them on the phone, you call them. They don't even say hello before they start telling you their latest issues. Have you ever been there? Where it's not even a hello. It's like, wow, you should hear what just happened to me. This is what happened, and that is what happened, and wow, all this stuff. Hello? What fragrance do we give out? What fragrance are we emanating? The fragrance of Christ or some other fragrance? Jesus had this smell on him, and the smell filled the entire house. And then the smell got on Mary's hair as well. Because as you pour out on Jesus, he pours back on you. You can't help but get some back when you're that close to God, when you're worshiping God. It comes back on you. And Mary's hair as well was filled with the same oil because she took the time to wipe his feet with her hair. That same oil that was on Jesus got on her. That same smell that was on Jesus got on her. An incredible picture of what worship does when we worship our Lord. Matthew 26. Well, actually, we don't even need to go to Matthew 26 if you're still, I don't know where you are anymore. But I'll read from Mark 14, verse 4. It says this: But there were some in the house who were indignant among themselves, and they said, "Why was this fragrant oil wasted? For it might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor." And they criticized her sharply. Matthew puts it, "Why this waste?" This is what they said. "Why this waste? Why waste all this on Jesus? Why this waste?" And they criticized her sharply. Sometimes we think, well, we got so many things. There's so many needs. There's so many things that we should do. There's so many problems. There's so many calls that I should make. There's so much poverty. There's so much sickness. There's so much need. There's so much hunger. There's so much of all these things. How can I take the time to actually just worship Jesus when there's so much stuff going on and there's so many needs and there's so many things that I should be doing? And the world screams out at us, "Why this waste?" And even our own internal self says, "Why this waste? How can you spend your time doing this when there's so many other things to do? Why this waste?" And it's a cry that the world puts in our heart. And it says, you don't have time for this. There are too many other things. There are too many other problems. There are too many other necessities. They're important. They're urgent. They're pressing. And Jesus addresses it directly. And he says, "The poor you're always going to have. You're always going to have the poor. But me, you won't always have with you." And there's a time to worship. There's a time to address the needs that are in the world. There's a time to pour your heart out with all the requests and all the things that we have. And we know there's a time for all those things, but there's a time to worship God. There's a time to worship Him and expect nothing else in return. I'm just going to worship God. I'm just going to spend this time worshiping God. I'm not even going to bring Him a request. Why this waste? The poor you will always have. The needs you will always have. The things, there's always going to be another need. There's a time to worship God, but we like things. We like to do things where we see the results. We like to know something has been accomplished. And sometimes, even when we are worshiping, we don't know if anything is being accomplished. Who's hearing? But we like things that we know are done. I could see the effects of me helping someone in need. I could see the effects of me visiting with somebody who's sick. I could see the effects of that. Those are all good things. Good things. We don't always see the effects of our worship. I too am a person who likes to see the effects of things done. I remember when I was a kid, we had to do chores around the house, and one of the things that my mom used to require of us is every once in a while we'd have to wash kitchen cabinets. And I used to be like, "Really? They're oak cabinets. You really can't see anything on them. They don't look dirty to me." And it would be like, "Well, I see it." And so me, as a kid, okay, Jesus has saved me since then, so I've been forgiven. What I said was, I told my mom, "Well, I washed one cabinet and I skipped one and then I washed another one." I was like, "Okay, which one is washed?" Well, I didn't think that one through too well. Because the end game wasn't exactly what I thought it would be. My point was made, but it didn't go my way. If you understand what I mean. I wanted to do something that mattered. I wanted to do something that you could see the result. I couldn't see the result of what I was doing, so I didn't want to do it. I would have much rather swept the garage or done something that at the end I could say, yes, it looks better. I've done something. But I was doing this thing which I could not tell had any effect at all. And sometimes this is the way sometimes this is the natural response to just worshiping Jesus. I can't tell if there's anything good coming of it. I can't tell if it's making a difference. I can't tell if God even cares. But he does care. He does care. And he does want this. So much so that he tells Mary. He tells Mary, why don't we just finish this? Verse number 6 of Mark 14, it says, but Jesus says, let her alone. After they criticized her, let her alone. Why do you trouble her? For she has done a good work for me. For you have the poor with you always, and whenever you wish, you may do them good. But me you do not have always. She has done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for burial. Assuredly, I say to you, whomever, wherever, this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial for her. So Jesus says, it's worth it. It's worth it. You might say it's a waste. The world might say it's a waste. But he says, it's so much not a waste that she's going to go down in history for what she's done here. It's not a waste. That personal, costly, extravagant worship is not a waste. It's not a waste of time. For as long as the gospel is told, she is going to be part of it for what she did. Jesus puts his stamp of approval on it and says, she did good. She did good. She took the time to worship me. She didn't care about all the criticism. She didn't care about anything else around her. She did good. And think of the character that went into Mary's actions. There was no shame in her. There was no shame in her worship. There's all these people around. Maybe dinner is served. Maybe it's about to be served. There's probably lots of things. There might be conversation. There all kinds of things. It's a dinner party, by the way. They're all there gathered, and all of a sudden she breaks the thing, pours the oil. The house is all filled in front of everybody. It's not like she called Jesus aside and said, hey, I got something to do. Can you come with me around side the house where no one will see us? She did this in the middle of everybody. Unannounced, unplanned. It wasn't on the agenda. It wasn't part of the script for the evening. Mary just did this. She was unashamed of what anybody said. She just did it. She wasn't afraid to show her extravagant love to her Savior in worship. And I know that we say, well, it's not my personality. I don't do those kinds of things. It's not how God made me. And then we blame God. It's not how God made me. Jesus says what she did was a good thing. I'm sure, in fact, the Bible says she was troubled at the response of everybody else. She was not comfortable doing this. She was not comfortable with what she did. She was troubled with the response of everybody else. The eyes of everybody else were on Mary. The criticism of everybody else was on Mary. And sometimes that's the way it is. Regardless of personality characteristics, who you are, maybe it's easier for some, the other, doesn't matter. Of course, the Bible doesn't, there isn't a separate section of the Bible for personality characteristics, which say, well, if you're this type of personality, well, then you're exempt from these verses, but then these verses might apply more to you and less to others. The Bible doesn't distinguish this way. One size fits all. They troubled Mary. She was bothered by their statements. But Jesus set her at rest. And Jesus said, don't trouble her. Because you guys are wrong and she's right. What she's doing is good. What you're telling her to do is not what I prefer. No shame. No shame in worship. In our day, she would lift her hands. In our day, she would cry out to God. In our day, she would be exuberant in her worship. That's in our day. In her day, everything was given. She doesn't care about the shame. She doesn't care about the criticism. She didn't care. Because her worship was costly, because it was extravagant, because it was personal, and because it had no shame. This is the Bible example, and when we can do those things, Jesus will say to us as well, this is the right thing. Don't trouble them. For she did a good thing. If we do those same things, Jesus will be in heaven saying the same thing to us. They're doing a good thing. They're worshiping. Whether it's at your home, whether it's here, whether it's in your workplace, we're doing a good thing. Don't bother. We're going to remember this forever. We're going to remember this 2,000 years later. They're still going to be talking about this little thing that Mary did in a house. Maybe a dozen or two dozen people, who knows. 2,000 years later, we're still talking about it because Jesus was so pleased with this type of worship. If we love him, and I know people love him, there's no doubt that people love him, ask God to give you that heart of worship, which will just be lavish. I know people love him. There's no doubt about that. Ask God to give you that heart of worship that he is pleased with, that he can say the same thing as he said to Mary, that he would say that same thing about you and about me as well. In the name of God be praised.